Yeah, definitely brokers specialize in certain asset classes is what I've found. There's some that are kind of a jack of all trades. I might look at several asset classes, but generally there's certain shops that will focus on certain asset classes. So we have a pretty wide network of brokers here. We've built a good steady deal flow here. So we have certain brokers, you know, we have one broker in particular that we've bought in two deals from, looking at a third one right now, where all he does really is industrial. So we're able to see quite a bit of industrial deals just through that one broker. Then we have a whole set of multifamily brokers. We have certain brokers that they're heavy on retail. So we'll get some retail deals from them. So I think the bigger the network you can create with brokers is huge. And I've learned that the biggest part about getting on, it's hard going back to when, you know, you're first starting and trying to get these brokers' attention.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Today, I am very thrilled to introduce our guest for the day, Brock Mogensen, all the way from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Brock, thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thanks for having me, Suja.
Absolutely. So everyone, Brock has been investing in real estate for over 3 years. He lives and invests in the Milwaukee, Wisconsin market. He has a master's in information systems and comes from an analytical background. And so I'm really excited to dig into that. Why don't you start us off, Brock, by telling us how and why you got into real estate investing when you had a master's in information systems, et cetera?
Yeah, so it really all started with going a little bit further back, started with growing up. I saw my dad owned two duplexes. Both my parents were very middle-class jobs, and just seeing the power of simply what owning two duplexes can change in your life, the extra cash flow having each month, what that can do, essentially drove me to, this is what I have to do. You know, I'm going to buy a duplex. That was my first thought out of college.
What was the impact that it had on your dad?
Just the ability to have extra income. You know, if you're only making, you know, a couple grand a month at your W-2 job, an extra $1,000 a month or whatever it is from your duplex, it goes a long way and allows you to buy, you know, go on the vacation you might not be able to, or buy the toy you might not be able to, stuff like that, where it, I really saw how much it changed. So my mindset was, well, if four units can do that, can buy you a boat, you know, what can I do if I get 400 units, or, you know, so that was kind of my mindset. And I went from that duplex to then scaled into some larger deals. That's what I do now.
Okay. Awesome. Yeah. And just so, how old were you when your dad started investing?
So I was young. So actually I grew up, and looking back at it, it's funny because I think the term house hack has become pretty widely known now, you know, where you live on one side and rent out the other. I actually grew up house hacking the two different duplexes with my parents. So it's kind of funny looking back, like, the, you know, he didn't even know that's what it was called back then. And it's funny telling him about it. Like, this is the term for it. But yeah, that's, so I kind of grew up seeing just, you know, how to do it. It wasn't like there was, you know, a huge portfolio I, you know, inherited or learned from that aspect, but the simplicity of cash flowing real estate, I learned that.
Yeah, for sure. And just real quick, so what did your parents do for work?
Yeah. So my mom's a teacher and my dad drove a cement truck.
Okay, cool. And I mean, I'm just going back because I'm curious, like, do you know what it was that got them interested? Also, what's the Spectra?
Really, I think he just kind of like realized what was possible by buying income producing properties. And that was kind of his mindset. It's a good question. I don't think I've ever actually gone too in detail on initially what drove him to do it.
Yeah. Well, I love that you picked that up from your dad and your mom and, you know, took it to the next level, it sounds like. So yeah, tell me a bit about that transition from working in IT to being full-time real estate.
Yeah. So I was doing both for about from when I started about, I'd say about 2.5, 3 years, I was, you know, I had a corporate job and then building this real estate portfolio on the side. So juggling both. That's actually, I've managed to get my master's in between there somewhere as well, but it was busy. I mean, and that's, I think that's really how most people are going to start, is you're not just going to, you know, leave your job right away and go into real estate investing. Real estate's more of a long-term, you're not just going to get rich, you know, in a few months. You can, I mean, if you're lucky, but it's more of a longer term thing. So you have to be willing to sacrifice and build on the side, I think, in most scenarios. So that's what I did. It took me about 3 years to be able to build the real estate up to enough where it exceeded what I was making at my job. And that was 6 months or so ago, I was able to walk away from my job and now real estate full-time and able to scale much quicker now is my vision.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, that's a huge milestone and, you know, not something that should be celebrated. So congratulations on that. What was it that made you feel like you could cut the cord?
The biggest thing I think was getting to a point where I felt comfortable enough with the amount of cash flow coming in each month. I don't think there's ever going to be a perfect time to, it's a big step. It's a scary step, you know, and it's never gonna be a perfect time. For me, it was the most ideal timing. Stuff's always going to change. So I think at some point, obviously you have to be conservative. You have to make sure, okay, I'm, you know, I have enough coming in to cover my basic expenses. But at some point you have to take risk to become, you know, to be an entrepreneur. There's a risk involved and there's always the possibility that everything fails and you go to zero. That's always a possibility. But at some point you just have to weigh out your risks and decide, you know, now is the time to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's well said. And I think there's so much there. Like there's not actually a really good time to take a leap. I mean, sometimes it's obvious, but oftentimes it's not, right? And you kind of have to get leverage on yourself and help yourself get over that hump of cutting the cord with something that's comfortable and something that's, you know, been a lifeline for you, like a W-2, for example. So yeah, congrats on that. And, you know, I know you are you just buying properties now in the Milwaukee area? And are you partnering with folks? Like, how does that work?
Yeah. So kind of the greater Milwaukee area is where we're buying stuff. So the deals I'm doing are syndicated deals. I have two partners and us three go out, find these deals, raise the money from investors to go out and buy them. So essentially we're creating these partnerships to go out and buy larger deals, much larger than I'd be able to afford on my own. Gives the investors the possibility to get in on these larger deals, get all the benefits of cash flowing real estate. So that's been the model I've followed ever since after that duplex. The next deal I did was an 89 unit. And that's kind of been the motto I've been following.
Yeah, for sure. What sorts of sizes of properties are you guys currently looking at? Just curious how that's may have changed over the years and what you're finding attractive right now.
Yeah. So after that apartment building, we ended up getting into some other asset classes. So we were in industrial, multifamily, retail, self-storage. We have an office building. So we've essentially got into several different asset classes and learned how triple net leases work. So now our scope's a little bit wider on the sort of deals we're looking at. So recently we closed on a mixed use deal yesterday. That's half retail, half apartments. So we're looking at different asset classes. I'd say industrial right now is probably the asset class I'm most excited about. Looking at quite a bit of deals there, but that was kind of our motto. And I know there's, you know, and I somewhat agree with the motto of, you know, sticking to one thing that you know, but for us, we had these opportunities come up, good deals. We're like, oh, might as well, the fundamentals are the same. Let's just learn the nuances and we can buy these deals. And that's kind of our business model now is we're able to look at, you know, three or four different asset classes and have more deal flow coming in and more opportunities to do deals.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think it makes a lot of sense to be able to diversify across asset classes. I mean, as an operator, there's probably some challenges to gaining the expertise needed in each of those asset classes. But, you know, like you said, with triple net leases and whatnot, it's probably a little bit less of a learning curve. I mean, multifamily might be one of the more complicated asset classes, the ones you mentioned, except for maybe office. So I am curious. You know, I know that you're an analytical person, you come from an analytical background. What are some of the KPIs? I mean, you know, I know you like to track KPIs. I'd love for you to give us a rundown on asset management, how you kind of make sure these properties are performing and what you do if they're not. And yeah.
Yeah. So I think tracking the numbers on an almost daily basis is huge. You have to have the property manager is going to be great at collecting rents, you know, keeping maintenance in check, all those things. But you have to keep an eye on it. You can't just, you know, take your hands off the wheel and say, all right, talk to you 5 years from now, we're thinking about selling. You have to be involved, you know, daily, weekly, to make sure this property is hitting pro forma and you're following your business plan that you promised to investors. So for me, the most efficient way to do it is to come up with systems to track your KPIs so you know, where you're at each day, where you stand each day. And if there's something that pops up that went wrong, you know, okay, I have to dive in and do it. So as far as like what tracking, I mean, the basic stuff, definitely you want to be tracking your income, expenses, where do you lie with that? A big one I like to look at, I look at pretty much every other day through, we have different email reports that come out each day. One of them is our collection rate across our portfolio and each different property. So I can see if, you know, one property, all right, you know, it's the 20th of the month and we only collected 80% of rent. You know, what can we do? You know, let me get in touch with our property manager at that property, see what's going on. Okay, there's five tenants that are late this month because of this reason. It's just stuff like that you want to know, and you're not going to know without tracking the KPIs. So stuff like that, I mean, I've kind of over time developed further ones that I dive into deeper, stuff like lease conversion rates and what marketing channels are attracting the most amount of leases. We found that Facebook Marketplace, through tracking it, was huge for us. So we doubled down there and had our virtual assistant, you know, put more efforts into there, put some advertising dollars there to generate more leads. So I think each person's business and type of property they're buying is going to, you know, there could be certain KPIs you want to track and not track. Definitely cover the basic ones, but also get creative as you go through the process and add ones that you find valuable.
For sure. What are you using to track? Are you using like any particular software or something you've created on your own?
Spreadsheets. I created like a template asset management KPI tracker. It's actually on my website. People wanted to download it, but it's as simple as that. I mean, I've looked into trying to create some dashboards and I'm looking at doing that. That would be, you know, the more pretty way to look at it, I would say. But it's as simple as tracking stuff in a spreadsheet. I mean, you can really do a ton in Excel and you're able to track everything you need there. And then once you get to the scale where you can afford to build out dashboards and you know, buy some of these more expensive programs, then you scale to that.
Yeah, for sure. But yeah, I mean, what you're doing right now is working and that's for what you want to track. And it's also allowing you the creativity to figure out, well, what is it that I want to measure, right? So can you just recap? So can you just go into some more detail about what you like to track?
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments. We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-CAP.com, and sign up for our newsletter.
Yeah, so I would say some of the bigger ones I like to look at is... Okay, so one is unit turn cost. So I'll look at each unit that turns every time a person moves out. First, how much did it cost us to flip that unit? Second, how long did it take from when that person moved out for the rehab to be completed? How long did it take from when the rehab was completed for that unit to be leased? Track all those things and look at it on a yearly basis. And once you get more and more data that compounds, you're able to look, okay, last year we were flipping units at $4,000. Now we're at $3,500. Okay, we went down $500. What did we do to get down there? Maybe there's more opportunity. You know, we can optimize and get that cost down to $3,000. Or maybe you find, you know, before we were flipping units, it took us a month to flip. Now we're flipping them in a month and a half. What changed? Just stuff like that, where that's a big one I like to track. Again, as I mentioned, the tracking by channel. I like to track how much leads come in from each channel. If you're using a property manager, most likely they're using a software like AppFolio. That's what we use. We're able to see by each channel how many leads, guest cards came in for that channel. And then you can kind of dive in as well and say, okay, how much of that channel was leased? And you can double down on certain channels, decide there's certain channels where you can pay $20 a month to get the premium advertising. You don't want to just start throwing money at advertising without knowing it's going to work. So you do the research and see if it's going to work first, and then invest your money into marketing. That's just stuff like that. There's a few other ones, but I mean, I always just like to take the data approach to things like that, where before I start just spending money aimlessly or trying to optimize in certain places, I want to have a data background on it to see where we can do it.
Yeah, for sure. I love that a lot. And I mean, those little changes over time, I mean, this incremental improvements really make for a very profitable, I mean, it's what helps you become more and more profitable is taking all these like things that may seem like they're maybe not as consequential, but when you add them up over, you know, however many hundreds of units or thousands of units that you have, if you can make, you know, like you said, bring that turnover cost down a bit or increase the amount of time it takes to flip the unit or how quickly you can release. I mean, all these things compound to make for, you know, incremental increases in revenue, which add up to like, I mean, as we know in commercial real estate, it just, if you can increase the net operating income, then that increases the value of the property by like 20-fold. So are you, speaking of which, do you guys like to hold, buy and hold, or do you think you're going to sell anytime soon? Or what's your approach to buying and holding versus selling and buying new?
Yeah. So I'd say our approach is somewhere in between both of those. We're usually looking out at a 5 to 10 year hold period. Again, with our model of bringing in investor money, some deals, maybe we have smaller investment groups where we might just hold forever. But generally when you're bringing in, you know, 10 investors on a deal, they don't want their money tied up for forever. You know, they want to see their money double or triple within 5 to 10 years is usually where investors want to see it. So generally that's where we're at, is we perform a 5 to 10 year hold. But that being said, you know, we could be in year 2 or 3 and we get an offer from someone and we look at the numbers and say, okay, we can double our investor money in 3 years. We're going to do that deal. We're not going to, you know, hold it for another 7 years just to see if we can get more. That's kind of our approach, is we like to tell investors, hey, be ready for your money to be tied up for up to 10 years. But there's a chance, you know, 2-3 years from now, we sell for a profit that we spoke about here. So that's kind of our model, is a little bit more fluid, but that's the way.
Sure, totally. No, I think that makes sense. Yeah. And then, you know, I wanted to circle back on just in general, the Milwaukee market. I mean, it's not a market that I'm familiar with. How would you say that market is, you know, in terms of, it's not like one of the hot markets, I would say, like that people talk about all the time. So, but I mean, that's not to say there's not money to be made there. So how do you view that market and its profitability and where to focus in order to, you know, have the most success?
Yeah, good question. You're totally right. It's not as sexy as Austin and Tampa and, you know, Atlanta and some of those big markets like that. For us, I mean, yeah, you look at the, you know, population job growth across Milwaukee, it's decent. You know, it's not huge. They're not losing population, which is good. But for us, we generally try to find certain pockets throughout the state. So most of our deals are more tertiary markets surrounding Milwaukee, where we see growth going on there. So there might be a little bit more population growth. You might see good job growth in a certain pocket where we're more inclined to find industrial deals. So that's kind of our approach when we're looking at markets. But like you said, I mean, it's not across Wisconsin, you're not really going to find huge appreciation and growth. The benefit to a market like Milwaukee is the cap rates are going to be higher. You're going to see higher cash on cash returns. You can find, we're finding industrials at 8, 9, 10 caps. You know, multifamily might be at a 6 cap, 7 cap, but compared to some of the other hot markets, you're looking at a 4 cap. So obviously the difference is in those hotter markets, you're going to see more natural appreciation, where in a market like Milwaukee, you might not see as much of that. So there's balance there. I'm a huge fan of a good cash on cash return in year one. So that's what I like about the Milwaukee market, is you can find deals where you're walking in at a 10% cash on cash.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, I think there's so much to be said for operating in those smaller markets that are not necessarily the hottest markets, because, you know, where there's still strong demographic data or demographic trends, and, you know, you can still buy solid assets in lots of different markets around the country. So, you know, we shouldn't all just flock to like the hot markets, right? There's a lot to be said for some of the smaller markets, and Milwaukee's clearly a very cool city. So curious about your industrial properties and what you've, you know, found interesting in that space and how you've been able to kind of make inroads. Like, are there brokers that, like, is there a whole different set of brokers that sell industrial properties, or is it just the same commercial brokers?
Yeah, definitely brokers specialize in certain asset classes is what I've found. There's some that are kind of a jack of all trades. I might look at several asset classes, but generally there's certain shops that will focus on certain asset classes. So we have a pretty wide network of brokers here. We've built a good steady deal flow here. So we have certain brokers, you know, we have one broker in particular that we've bought in two deals from, looking at a third one right now, where all he does really is industrial. So we're able to see quite a bit of industrial deals just through that one broker. Then we have a whole set of multifamily brokers. We have certain brokers that they're heavy on retail. So we'll get some retail deals from them. So I think the bigger the network you can create with brokers is huge. And I've learned that the biggest part about getting on, it's hard going back to when, you know, you're first starting and trying to get these brokers' attention. I think a lot of people is they, you know, you'll see on forums and stuff where they're, oh, I called this broker and they're not sending me any deals. And it's like, yeah, especially in this market right now, you're not a simple email or a simple 5-minute phone call to a broker saying, hey, you know, I'm looking for XYZ. You know, this is my name. This is what I do. That's not going to do anything. The broker will say, okay, cool. Hey, I'll keep you in mind. They're going to throw you on your email list with the other 1,000 people. And, you know, you're going to see that deal that gets, you know, sent out to thousands of people. The way to do it is you gotta build good relationships with brokers. Obviously, the best way to build a rapport with a broker is to buy a deal from them. But before you do that, the best way for me to do it is I narrowed a list down to like 10 brokers. Like, these brokers are the people I want to get to know. I took them out, you know, took them out for lunch, and I follow up with them pretty much every other week, monthly now, and just let them know, hey, I'm still looking for deals. You know, around Christmas, send them out a card, give them a call every couple of weeks randomly just to check in. You got to stay on top of their radar, otherwise they're going to forget about you. You want to work your way into their, I call it their top five, right? You know, in MySpace, you had your top five. That's what you want to get in with the broker. You want to be in their top five. So when they get that new deal from a seller, they're calling you. You're not just getting it on the email list. They're calling you and say, hey, I just got this deal. Before I send it out to my email list, I want to give you a first look at it. And that's where we've gotten you with several different brokers. And that's where we buy our deals.
Yeah, totally. I think that's really very, you know, I mean, like, you hear this all the time, but then actually doing it is kind of another thing. So what systems do you have in place to like make sure that you are able to like stay in the top five?
Yeah, really. It's just following up, whatever system you want to do. We set up our CRM. So we were able to track everything there and kind of, you know, set reminders and stay and keep notes of what we've done with communication. Yeah.
What CRM do you like to use?
HubSpot.
Okay.
Got set up with there. I mean, HubSpot's great. There's the technology that they have is there's just so many features. Obviously, it's one of the more pricier ones. That's just initially what I set up with. And it's just too much of a hassle to switch to a different CRM. So I like it. But yeah, there's a ton of them out there. And maybe you don't start, at the beginning, you just track everything in a spreadsheet with calendar reminders. I mean, it can be as simple as that. I don't think some people worry too much about, oh, I got to get my LLC set up and a logo and a website, and I got to get my CRM set up. All that stuff's important. But the most important thing is building the relationships and starting towards, you know, getting deals done. All that other stuff can come, you know, after you start doing deals and build those relationships. Most important part, obviously, learn. First step is learning, you know, podcasts like this, books, events, building relationships. Those two are the backbone for being successful in any business, I would say.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. And I wanted to just dig into this industrial asset class. What kinds of facilities have you invested in? And like, what do you look for from an underwriting standpoint on an industrial deal?
Yeah. So the type of industrial deals we've done so far are pretty mixed. We've done some like a smaller facility that just has several units where people are operating, like we have a towing company and a car shop. We have another one that is more of like a workshop sort of place. We converted one of the buildings actually to boat and RV storage. We're looking at some more like manufacturing type of facilities now, where they're a little bit more larger scale, you know, bigger square foot deals. So kind of across the board on exactly what type of industrial facilities. Like you said, there's different kind of segments in industrial. As far as on the underwriting side, there are the fundamentals are the same. You know, you got income, expenses, NOI, multifamily, and all asset classes. They all have that same fundamental. The big difference is, for me, vacancy. That's the biggest difference between a multifamily deal and a triple net deal. Is multifamily, you can throw in 7%, 5% vacancy across the board, and that's, you know, it's pretty easy to model that out. Industrial or retail, when you have, let's say you're looking at a single tenant industrial deal, their lease is up 4 years from now. In year five, are they going to renew or are they going to move out? You know, you can do as much research as you want and try to get an idea of, you know, what probability they have of renewing, but you don't know. So you have to model out that vacancy factor. Are you going to use 3 months to fill it up? Or are you going to use a year? Are you going to use 2 years? What's your vacancy factor there? There's no exact science. You know, there's programs to kind of give you probability of vacancy rates and everything in that market. But at the end of the day, you're making an educated guess how long it'll take you to lease up that space. So our philosophy is usually be pretty conservative. So we'll usually use a year vacancy factor to fill that space. But obviously a property sitting a year with no income coming in, you know, that's a big hit for that year. So that's obviously, you know, the obvious risk in a deal like that, where you could go 100% vacant, you know, within a few years, compared to multifamily where, you know, I could lease an apartment next week. I could hop on Facebook Marketplace and throw an ad up there and get it leased in a few days if I wanted to. Where industrial, it's, you're working with leasing agents, you're talking to businesses. It's a lot tougher to lease up those units compared to an apartment.
Yeah, for sure. And how much time would the tenant need to give you, like, before their lease is up typically?
It varies by lease. That's another thing, is with compared to in the industrial, you really dissect the lease and what's in the lease. Multifamily, you know, you look at the leases too as part of your due diligence, but they're generally the same. And most of them are pretty much the same. Industrial, they're all completely different as far as, you know, what rent, how much is their rent going up each year? Usually 2-3% rent escalators each year. Sometimes leases don't have any rent escalators on it for people that aren't, you know, that set up these leases that aren't as experienced. So you got to look at stuff like that. You got to look at, and there, sometimes it might say it's a triple net lease, but in the lease, you'll see the property management fee is capped at 4%, or they only pay 70% of taxes, not 100%. So there's stuff like that where in industrial, you really have to read through line by line in the lease to see that you're modeling everything correctly.
Totally. Yeah. That's good to know. And just, it's a really important heads up that, like, it's such a critical part, since you do just have one tenant and there can be a lot of variation, it sounds like. I mean, I've heard of various things like that. Some industrial leases will be triple net lease, or there usually are, but still obviously, like, taking it at a granular level. I've also heard about the sale lease back. Yeah. Which is, well, why don't you explain that to the listeners?
So sale lease back is, it's funny because we're actually looking at a deal right now with that structure. Hopefully we're going to have locked up, but essentially what it is a, let's say a company, and this is the scenario of this deal is, let's say a company bought this facility, they're operating their business out of this facility. So they own the property, their business is the tenant. They decide, hey, you know, this, I bought this building for $1 million 10 years ago. It's worth $5 million now. That extra that $4 million profit would go a long way if I invested it in my business. So I'm going to sell it for $5 million, and then I'm going to lease back the space for 5 years. And that's essentially what it is these owners will sell their building and they'll lease back the space. So they get the profit on the sale, and then they're just a tenant at that building. So they're not tied to it. They can move out 5 years from now and still collect that cash. So it's also profitable from, you know, on the buy side, is you can buy a property with a good tenant that's committed to the space, and they're going to sign generally a longer term lease. So it's advantageous to both parties in most scenarios. So that's definitely something that I think it's somewhat common in industrial space, but I think it's becoming more so common this past 6 months to a year as industrial's gotten more popularity. A lot of these owners are getting in touch with brokers and saying, hey, I didn't even know this was a possibility. Let's do it. We're trying to find more of those, definitely.
Yeah, it mitigates some of the common risks that's associated with industrial, right? Because you have this one tenant, and if they leave, then that's difficult. But if you have a business that's committed to the space, like you said, they've maybe invested in the space, they're very comfortable operating their business out of the space already. They know it's going to work for them. They've been there for so long, you know, so they know what they're signing up for when they sign a lease. So, you know, they're just better able to project into the future what it's going to look like and be able to do for them as a business. So I think it's definitely going to be one of the more hot ways to get into industrial as it gets more popular. So yeah. Well, awesome stuff. Thank you so much, Brock, for sharing just a whole bunch of information about, you know, and knowledge and insights and perspectives on real estate investing, like lots of valuable stuff. Very impressed with what you guys are accomplishing out there. Please share with the listeners how they can learn more about you and anything else you want to share.
Yeah. So we have a few different ways. First off, my email is Brock, B-R-O-C-K @smartassetcapital.com. So feel free to shoot me a message. Our website, smartassetcapital.com. We also have a kind of like a media arm. That's capitalclub.io, where we put out a whole bunch of, that's where my asset management tracker is and all of our different eBooks and stuff. I also have some underwriting courses on there. And then also Instagram. I'm trying to be pretty active there and post as much value as I can. So that's just my first and last name, Brock Mogensen.
Awesome. Well, it sounds like you have just a ton of resources that would be helpful to listeners learning to get interested in learning about the space and how to be effective and profitable and careful, et cetera. So thanks so much, Brock, for coming on the show. Yeah, it's been great to have you. And I hope you check out his stuff and we'll see you next time. Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.